Welcome to VSchool. We are on Unit 3. And Unit 3 is going to tell you so many things about procedural aspect and levies under GST. The learning objectives for Unit 3 is to understand the procedure for registration under GST. Who is supposed to register? Who is not supposed to register? When one is supposed to register and what are the formalities that are required for registration. We will understand the different categories of GST registration. We'll also learn about the scope of supply and tax liabilities of mixed and composite supply. We will see what is the GST rate applicable in a mixed supply, what is the GST rate applicable in a composite supply, after understanding the exact meaning of a mixed supply and a composite supply. We will also do some computations of taxable value and tax liability with specific examples. And finally, we will learn the provisions of the transfer of input tax credit. So let's start with Unit 3. The structure of GST stands on the foundation of registration system. As I said in the previous units, everything is done online. And the registration process, in fact, starts the tax cycle for a registered person. A registered person is liable to pay tax. A registered person is eligible to also avail the benefits of input tax credit mechanism. A registered person can collect GST from his recipients. We have seen this very important provision of indirect tax, wherein the final tax is paid by the consumer. However, the registered person first collects the GST and deposits the tax that is collected from consumer with the government. So friends, this is a small introduction to the registered person. Let us see some more details about the registration process and procedure. The structure of GST stands on the foundation of registration system. Just like we saw, a registered person needs to register as soon as he becomes eligible within the prescribed period. An unregistered person is not taxed and is also not required to register, and hence he is kept outside the input tax credit mechanism. A person will be required to obtain GST registration if he or she falls within the reach of an extensive list of statutory prescribed criteria requiring compulsory registration. In the next few slides, we are going to see these statutory requirements on the basis of which a person is required. A person, when we talk about person, supplier of goods and services. And when he is required to have compulsory GST registration, we'll look into the statutory provisions for registration. Now let us look at section 22 of the CGST Act. This is the first section which talks about registration of various persons under the GST laws. Every supplier shall be liable to be registered in a state from where it makes a taxable supply of goods or services. When his aggregate turnover in the financial year exceeds 20 lakhs. Now, this 20 lakhs will change in certain scenarios. Two main scenarios. The first scenario would be, the limit would be rupees 10 lakhs for persons conducting business in the northeastern states, which also includes the Sikkim. And in case of a person who is engaged in exclusive supply of goods, this limit of rupees 20 lakhs has been increased to rupees 40 lakhs with effect from 1st of April 2019. So note down this important provision. Whenever a person is engaged in exclusive supply of goods, the limit is rupees 40 lakhs from 1st of April 2019. So these are the three different scenarios for which registration would be required under section 22 of the CGST Act 2017. how do a person register? Person, that is a supplier, has to make an application on the GST portal within 30 days from the date when he becomes liable for registration. A person having multiple business verticals in one state may obtain separate registration for each of these business vertical so that he have a proper accounting for each vertical. Now, let us look at a specific provision on casual taxable person or a non-resident taxable person. A casual taxable person or a non-resident taxable person shall apply for at least 5 days prior to the commencement. So, casual taxable person or a non-resident taxable person, he has to apply for registration at least 5 days prior to the commencement of the business. Because these are the people who are not into regular business. They have a casual type of business. They have some specific period during which they will try to do the business. So they have to do advanced registration. What is that advanced registration? 5 days prior to the commencement of business. Now let us look at the provision of who is a casual taxable person and a non-taxable, non-resident taxable person, and what are the procedure for registration for them. A casual taxable person or a non-resident taxable person shall electronically submit signed form, that is GST REG09, along with a self-attested copy of a valid passport for registration at least 5 days before the commencement of business at a common portal. A casual taxable person or a non-resident taxable person shall be given a temporary reference by the GST portal. This is the beauty of it. You don't have to go through the physical process, come again for the next time and keep on waiting. As soon as you apply, you will get a temporary reference number, and this temporary reference number will enable the casual taxable person or the non-resident taxable person for making an advance deposit of tax. This condition is very important. So the casual taxable person or a non-resident taxable person has to make an advance deposit of tax equivalent to the estimated tax liability of such person for the period of registration which is sought by him or her. Now this advance tax or deposit of tax that is paid, that will get adjusted with the tax liability when the actual supply happens. The certificate of registration issued to a casual taxable person or a non-resident taxable person shall be specified in the period of registration would be specified in the certificate of registration and shall be valid for the period specified in the application for the registration or 90 days from the effective date of registration, whichever is earlier. So by default, 90 days or the period specified in the application for registration, whichever is earlier. So this point has to be noted as far as the validity of certificate of registration of a casual taxable person or a non-resident taxable person. As far as who is a casual taxable person, who is a non-resident taxable person, we have already seen these provisions in the previous units. This unit, we are specifically talking about the procedural requirement for registration. Now, let us look at Section 24. Section 24 of the CGST Act 2017 talks about compulsory registration. As per Section 24 of the CGST Act 2017, the benefit of the threshold exemption is not available to the e-commerce operator and they are liable to be registered irrespective of the value of supply. So, very pointed provision as far as the e-commerce operators are concerned. Who are the e-commerce operators? They can be any person who intends to sell on the e-commerce platform. Take for example, Flipkart, Amazon, Snapdeal, they don't have physical place of business. Everything, the transaction, the supply happens electronically. and they are required to obtain GST registration. Where the e-commerce operator are liable to pay tax on behalf of the suppliers under a notification issued under Section 9, Subsection 5 of the CGST Act 2017, the suppliers of such services are entitled for the threshold exemption. Now, we will look at procedure for registration under Section 25 of the CGST Act 2017. Every person who is liable to be registered shall apply for registration within 30 days from the date on which he becomes liable for registration. Before applying for registration, the taxpayer shall declare his legal name or of business, the PAN number, the mobile number, email address, and the state or union territory in Part A of Form GST REG01 on the Common Portal. So this basic information has to be declared by every taxpayer in specific form, that is GST REG01 Part A. On successful verification of these numbers, a reference number will be generated. Once again, everything happens electronically, online. Applicant shall submit Part B of GST REG01, duly signed along with the document specified in the said form at the Common Portal, once he receives the reference number. On receipt of an application, an acknowledgement will also be issued electronically to the applicant by the GST portal in form GST REG2. So once GST REG2 is received as an acknowledgement, then the details supplied by the registered person or the person who wants to get registered are supposed to be received, and the next process will start for registration. If the documents are found to be in order, the proper officer shall approve the registration within 3 working days. So it's very time bound, and you don't have to wait for weeks after weeks. Within 3 days of receipt of documents, if all the documents are found to be in order, the proper officer shall approve the registration within 3 working days, 7 days in case of deficiency from the date of submission. So if there is any want of any information in a document, proper officer will call for, and then in that case it would be 7 days in case of deficiencies from the date of submission of the required documents. If the application for grant of registration has been approved, a certificate of registration is issued in form GST REG6. So this GST REG6 is a very important document. It will have the details about registration, it will have the GST registration number, so that can be quoted for all your GST communication with the portal. This GST registration number is a 15-digit goods and services identification number. The registration certificate shows the principal place of business and additional places of business, if any, is made available to the applicant on the Common Portal. We will look into the details about this 15-digit goods and services tax identification number, what each digit represents. Out of the 15 digits, the first 2 characters represents the state code. The next 10 characters are for the PAN or the TAN of the person. The next 2 characters are for the entity code, what type of entity the person is. And finally, the last digit is the checksum. So that makes to total 15 digits of the GST tax identification number. Now, what happens when there is a multiple business vertical in a state or a union territory? It can have a single registration. Single registration will be granted if a person has a single business. However, if a person has a multiple business vertical in a state or union territory, that person may be granted a separate registration for each business vertical. So there is a choice for single registration, there is a choice for multiple business verticals registration. In case of an SEZ unit, a person who owns a SEZ unit shall make a separate application for the registration. Now note an important procedural aspect, especially in case of specialized agency such as an United Nations organization. Any specialized agency of the United Nations organization or any multilateral financial institution and organizations notified under the United Nations Privileges and Immunities Act 1947, consulate or embassy of foreign countries, and any other person or class of persons as notified by the commissioner. They have to obtain a unique identity number. So for this particular category of entities, a unique identity number has to be obtained from the GST portal. A supplier shall not be liable for registration. Up till now, we have seen who all are liable for registration. Now, there are certain instances where a supplier shall not be liable for registration. Which are they? If the aggregate turnover consists only of such goods or services which are not liable to pay tax or wholly exempt under that act. An agriculturist, through the extent of supply of procedure, produce out of cultivation of land. The government may, on recommendations of the council, by notification, specify the category of persons who may be exempted from opting registration. So the government will keep on adding as to those who don't require registration. But as of now, the aggregate turnover is a very important criteria, which specifically talks about non-liability to pay tax, as well as the exemption, no liability to register agriculturist to the extent supply of produce of the cultivation of land. So up till now, we have seen the provisions where registration is required. We have also seen where a supplier shall not be liable for registration. Now, some connected provisions related with registration that also needs to be seen. First amongst them is deemed registration under Section 26 of the CGST Act 2017. If a supplier takes a registration under one act, it shall be deemed that the registration has also been obtained under the other act and vice versa. If an application for registration has been rejected under the State or Union Territory Goods and Services Tax Act, then it shall be deemed that the same has been rejected under the Central Goods and Services Act. So this clarity is absolutely clear under Section 26. If a proper officer fails to take action in 3 working days from the date of submission, the registration is deemed to be unapproved. So this is the reason I said it is a time-bound process. If no action in 3 working days from the date of submission, registration deemed to have been approved. The proper officer is satisfied with the clarification, he may approve the grant of registration to the applicant within 7 working days on receipt of such clarification. And where no action is taken in 7 working days on the clarification received from the applicant, the registration is deemed to have been granted. So both ways, when by default the approval is required or approval after submission of required information is done. So 3 days, 7 days, the timeline is very clear. If there is no action taken, it would be deemed to have been approved. Now friends, let us look at the provisions on cancellation of GST registration. Cancellation of GST registration can be done by the proper officer or on an application filed by the registered person or by his legal heirs, because cancellation may be required in certain scenarios. The cancellation of registration shall not affect the liability of a person to pay the tax. Yes, you can cancel from a particular time, but whatever liability was there, that needs to be complied with. Registration can be temporarily cancelled. Which scenarios? If the registered person violates the provisions of the Act. If the registered person does not conduct the business from the declared place of business. If the business has been discontinued. If there is any change in the constitution of the business. If the registered person issues the invoice or bill without supply of goods or services, and if the taxable person is no longer liable to be registered. So these are the scenarios under which registration can be temporarily cancelled. A proper officer cannot simply take any action without giving an opportunity of being heard to the registered person. The proper officer shall cancel the registration only after giving the person an opportunity of being heard. When, if the person covered under the composition scheme has not furnished returns for 3 consecutive tax periods. If the registered person has not furnished returns for the period of 6 months. If the person who has taken voluntary registration has not commenced business within 6 months from the date of registration. If the person has obtained a business by means of a fraud. So these are the scenarios under which the proper officer shall cancel the registration. However, such person should be given an opportunity of being heard, and after hearing, the proper officer can take appropriate action. Now, after looking at the provisions related to registration, cancellation, now let us look at the provisions of levy and collection of GST under Section 9 of the CGST Act 2017. Tax shall be levied on all interested supplies of goods or services of both, except on the supply of alcoholic liquor for human consumption, on the value determined under Section 15 and such rates and collected in such manner as may be prescribed and shall be paid by the taxable person. So Section 15 is very important for determining the value of the transaction, and based on that the tax rate will be determined, the computation of tax would be done, and the tax has to be paid by the taxable person. We have seen two main types of supplies, a composite supply and a mixed supply. On what basis, on what rate tax is levyable in case of a composite supply, in case of a mixed supply? Let us see that provision now. A composite supply comprising of two or more supplies, one of which is a principal supply, shall be treated as a supply of such principal supply. In case of a mixed supply comprising of two or more supplies, shall be treated as a supply of particular supply which attracts the highest rate of tax. So what does this mean? In case of a composite supply, the principal supply becomes very important for determining the GST rate. In case of a mixed supply, the supply which has the highest rate of tax becomes very important for determining the tax rate. There are three key elements of supply: the time of supply, the place of supply, and the value of supply. In the previous unit, we have seen specific provisions on all the three, that is time of supply, place of supply, and value of supply. These three elements together determine the chargeability of taxes on the supply. Now let us see how place of supply determines the levyability of GST under the GST laws. The place of supply defines whether the transactions will be counted as an intrastate supply, that is, the supply happens within the same state, or an interstate supply, that is, the supply happens between two states. And based on whether the supply is an intrastate supply or an interstate supply, the GST would be levyable, whether it would be a CGST and SGST together, or whether it be only an IGST, it will be purely on the basis of the place of supply. As we have already seen, both CGST and SGST would be simultaneously levyable in case of an intrastate supply, and IGST would be levyable in the case of an interstate supply. While determining the levy of taxes based on the place of supply, two things are considered. That is number one, location of the supplier, and number two, the place of the supplier. It is the registered place of business of the supplier which becomes very important for deciding the location of the supplier. And when it comes to the place of supply, it is a registered place of the business of the recipient. So from the supplier point of view, from the recipient point of view, the location of supplier and the place of supply becomes very important while determining the levy of tax under the GST laws. Now let us understand this with specific example. An intrastate supply of goods. Supplier of, say, craft products, Cloud Creations Private Limited, having a registered office in Bangalore, which is in Karnataka. This supplier supplies goods to schools in Manipal, which is also in Karnataka. So both the supplier and receiver of goods are based in one state, that is Karnataka. And since the supplier as well as recipient are located in the same state, that is Karnataka, it will be considered as an intrastate supply of goods. And since it is an intrastate supply of goods, both the CGST and SGST will be leviable simultaneously on this intrastate supply of goods. Let us understand one more example with relation to the interstate supply of goods. Same supplier of craft products, that is Cloud Creations Private Limited, having its registered office in Bangalore, Karnataka. But here, the recipient is Delhi Public School, located in Jaipur, which is in another state, that is Rajasthan. Now, in this scenario, supplier and recipient are located in different states, that is Karnataka and Rajasthan. Supplier is from Rajasthan, supplier is from Karnataka, and receiver is from Rajasthan. It would be considered as an interstate supply of goods, and hence IGST would be leviable for this particular supply from one state to another state. What are the provisions for determination of supply of place of supply of goods? The place of supply of goods where the supply involves movement of goods. The place of supply of goods where the supply involves no movement of goods. And the place of supply of goods in case of export and imports. So these are the three scenarios under which we need to determine the place of supply. The first one, where supply involves movement of goods. In the second scenario, supply involves no movement of goods. And in the third scenario, where there is a export and import of goods. Now let us see provisions for determining the place of supply of services. The location of the recipient of service where the supply is received at a place of business for which the registration has been obtained, such place of business. Where the supply is received at a place other than the place of business for which the registration has been obtained, a fixed establishment elsewhere, such fixed establishment becomes very important. Where a supply is received at more than one establishment, whether the location of business or fixed establishment, then the location of the establishment most directly concerned with the receipt of supply. And in the absence of such places, the location of the usual place of residence of the recipient would be useful for determining the place of supply of services. When the location of the provider and supplier of services is to be considered for determining the place of supply, then where the supply is made from a place of business for which the registration has been taken, the location of such place of business, where the supply is made from a place other than the place of business for which the registration has been obtained, which is a fixed establishment elsewhere, and the location of such fixed establishment. Where the supply is made from more than one establishment, whether the place of business or fixed establishment, the location of the establishment most directly connected with the provision of the supply. And in the absence of such supplies, the location of the usual place of residence of the supplier. Now let us take certain examples to understand the place of supply of goods and services. Mr. C of Chennai supplies goods to SpiceJet Airlines of Chennai, flying between Delhi and Mumbai. This is a very, very unique scenario. It is not like a simple supply, but the supplier provides goods to the recipient. Note down the facts of the case. C of Chennai supplies goods to SpiceJet Airlines of Chennai. But here, the airlines is flying between Delhi and Mumbai. And the goods are loaded in the aircraft in Delhi. So the place of supply in this scenario would be Delhi, and Mr. C of Chennai is liable to pay the tax, which is IGST, an interstate. So in addition to the normal supplies that could happen, such type of unique scenarios also needs to be considered for finding the place of supply, and based on that deciding whether it is an intrastate or interstate supply. Let us take another example to find a place of supply of goods. Mr. D is located in New Delhi and he places order on, say, Mr. Delhi of New Delhi itself for installation of air condition machine in his factory, which is located in Chennai, which is in another state. So what does D do? D procures the indoor and outdoor units, set of plugs, electrical cables, distribution boards, and all other items from different states in India. And since this delivery has to happen in Chennai, he delivers it to Chennai. The said machine is also assembled in Chennai. Now, what should be the place of supply? All the different states from where the resources are gathered, or the place where everything is assembled together to make a unit of a good. Obviously, the place of supply would be Chennai, where the machine is assembled. However, Mr. D of Delhi is liable to pay IGST. So, once again, I am trying to bring to your notice that the facts of the case becomes very important to decide whether it's an intrastate supply or an interstate supply. Thank you.